For the Pacifica Radio Network and Planet Waves FM, this is the Miracle Hour. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, broadcasting to you from Kingston, New York. It is good to be back with you. For those listening on the internet, I took a week off, and for those listening on our broadcast station, WOOL Black Sheep Radio, hello once again. Today, I'm here to talk about a section early on in the text, which is called Revelation, Time, and Miracles. This is actually the second chapter of the Course in Miracles text. As mentioned, Course in Miracles, a book published in, I think, 1976, is divided into three main sections. There's a textbook, which is a theoretical foundation. There's a workbook, which is a kind of a practical foundation of daily exercises. And there is a teacher's manual, which is kind of a combination of experiential and theoretical information, kind of telling you what to look for and some experiences that you may have. And if you're someone new to the program and you're curious about the structure of the project and what it's like and what the different books are about, I suggest you just listen back through some back editions at planetwaves.fm. There's a category for the Miracle Hour, and in the early programs, I describe one book per program and then have broken out into kind of a free form. In the last edition, we covered a section from the middle of the text, one of the more intense, somewhat dramatic sections that I think is the crux of the Course in Miracles. But here we're at the beginning of the book, right where you'd be if you just basically started reading, where you'd be right around the second day of the textbook. I think that the principles of miracles would probably, the section immediately before this might take you a few minutes, rather a few days or a day to read, and then you would turn the page and you would be up to Revelation, Time, and Miracles. This is a section of Course in Miracles that is really interesting if you are turned on by metaphysics, basically. It is one of the sections that most clearly and directly, with no window dressing at all, explains certain basic facts about the structure of time in particular. And both Einstein and A Course in Miracles put forth the idea that space and time are one illusion, basically. Einstein was the first person to challenge the supremacy of time as some kind of a universal constant or fundamental law, and he proved that time is elastic. So this is something to come into this discussion of time knowing, that from our viewpoint on Earth, time seems like a intractable thing that has no flexibility, almost like a train that we're riding that we can't get off of. But speaking of trains, Einstein, as part of the experiments leading to the proof of the theory of relativity, proved that time is not a constant. I don't totally understand all the physics involved, but I can explain it this far. Just as a little precursor, when you hear the voice of A Course in Miracles talking about how time is a kind of a non-absolute variable, I'm going to tell you what Einstein figured out. He came up with the equation E equals mc squared. So what that means is E, energy, equals matter times a constant term, C, to the second power squared, times itself. And he's trying to figure out how much energy is contained within matter. That's the fundamental thing that special relativity is trying to figure out. Energy has a value, and he's extrapolating the value into matter. I think M is mass or matter. I believe it's actually mass. I'm not a physicist here, but I just think this is a really cool thing. So E, energy equals mass times a constant term, some constant times itself. And so first they Einstein and his lab assistants try to use time as the constant term, because it's certainly convincing that time is constant, right? But they couldn't get the equation to work. It wouldn't balance. And they must have had some reason to know that they were onto something, but they had to experiment with different constant terms. What's going to be your constant? So they tried it with time. Time didn't work. So then they thought, well, let's see if time is a constant. And so they did the train experiment, where they set up a train in this early part of the 20th century, and they were able to time with a very precise stopwatch and probably some kind of a mechanical clock, an electronic clock that they must have had for big science back then, and an electric eye, which was not a commercially available product. And they figured out the time moves slower on a moving train. So when you are in motion, time moves more slowly, not merely in your perception, but as a measurable thing, that an atomic clock on an airplane will register ever so slightly less time having passed than a corresponding atomic clock on Earth, both matched up at the same time. You go up in the airplane or spaceship and you fly around really fast, and you find out the time progressed more slowly on the moving object, which could be timed with a train. Okay, so you don't really have to be going that fast. And this, by the way, is where Einstein came up with the twin paradox, that if there's two twins on Earth and one boards a spaceship and flies around the solar system of the universe at the speed of light and comes back, everybody he knew will be gone, because time was moving more slowly aboard the spacecraft than it was moving on Earth. So that's called the twin paradox. And let's use that as a starting point to understand here that, as far as I can reckon, A Course in Miracles is not merely giving spiritual speculation, but rather is describing something that is a known property of actual life. Okay, so next thing is, since this is a critical reading plus personal experience of A Course in Miracles, I hadn't read this chapter for quite a while. I read it for the first time about 30 years ago, and kind of learned it and took it with me, and now I'm looking at it again and had this flashback to the feeling of how utterly right and at the same time strange and kind of on time it felt to be reading this, where I had the idea, this like palpable feeling in my body, really not an idea but a sensation, that I was getting some real information here. So in that spirit, let's actually go to the text and see what these beings have to say. Jesus is going to turn up as the first person voice. He doesn't identify himself by name. And remember, somebody called Helen Schuckman is channeling, writing this down, scribing, I guess, is the better word, following a kind of inner verbal dictation. And this is what she got pretty early on. Chapter 2. Well, text chapter 1, part 2. Revelation, time, and miracles. Revelation induces complete but temporary suspension of doubt and fear. It reflects the original form of communication between God and his creations, involving the extremely personal sense of creation sometimes sought in physical relationships. Physical closeness cannot achieve it, says A Course in Miracles. Miracles, however, are genuinely interpersonal and result in true closeness to others. Revelation unites you directly with God. Let's say that again. Revelation unites you directly with God. Miracles can miracles unite you directly with your brothers and sisters. Neither emanates from consciousness, but both are experienced there. Consciousness is the state that induces action, though it does not inspire it. You're free to believe what you choose, and what you do attests to what you believe. Okay, there's a lot in here, and this is really like some kind of a book out of a science fiction novel. I mean, it'd be really easy to write a science fiction novel or fantasy novel where these with using selective quotes from A Course in Miracles as the basis of the, you know, some central teaching, perhaps on some other planet, it would be maybe more convincing. Let's read this paragraph again, and kind of sift through the ideas. Revelation induces complete but temporary suspension of doubt and fear. It reflects the original form of communication between God and his creations, involving the extremely personal sense of creation sometimes sought in physical relationships. Physical closeness cannot achieve it. Miracles, however, are genuinely interpersonal and result in true closeness to others. Let's pause there. Miracles are interpersonal. This is a key quality. They're between me and you, you and me, you and your lover, you and your roommates, you and your parents, you and your kids, you and your dogs and kitty cats, everyone. They're on the level of us, basically. Revelation unites you directly with God. Okay. Miracles unite you directly with your brother and sisters. Neither emanates from consciousness, but both are experienced there. So it's saying this is not some illusion of the mind. Neither emanates from consciousness, but both are experienced there. So you comes back to consciousness. Consciousness is the state that induces action, though it does not inspire it. My comment, the inspiration comes earlier than consciousness. You're free to believe what you choose, and what you do attests to what you believe. All right, next paragraph. Revelation is intensely personal and cannot be meaningfully translated. That is why any attempt to describe it in words is impossible. Good to remember that, right? Because you're likely to experience revelation, and by which I do not mean the seven seals and the four horsemen of the apocalypse, but I mean something being revealed to you. Miracles, on the other hand, induce action. Okay, let's read that again. Revelation is intensely personal and cannot be meaningfully translated. This is why any attempt to describe it in words is impossible. Revelation induces only experience. Miracles, on the other hand, induce action. They're more useful now because of their interpersonal nature. In this phase of learning, working miracles is important because freedom from fear cannot be thrust upon you. Revelation is literally unspeakable because it is an experience of unspeakable love. I would say I've had several experiences of revelation, which I call experiences of meeting God. And I will say that they definitely felt like unspeakable love, and that any attempt I've ever made to explain them has kind of fallen flat, because there's really no way to explain this, even though they happened in ordinary places and times. What's not an ordinary place and time? I wasn't abducted to the mothership to have this. I was, you know, just roaming around the planet or driving around. Very difficult to describe, but miracles are more accessible. And what this little paragraph here is saying is that miracles are more useful now because of their interpersonal nature. That is to say, they're about relationships. And working miracles is important because freedom from fear cannot be thrust upon you. Revelation is literally unspeakable because it is an experience of unspeakable love. Okay, moving on. Awe should be reserved for revelation, to which it is perfectly and correctly applicable. It's not appropriate for miracles because a state of awe is worshipful, implying that one of a lesser order stands before his creator. Let's try that again. Awe should be reserved for revelation, to which it is perfectly and correctly applicable. Awe is not appropriate for miracles because the state of awe is worshipful, implying that one of a lesser order stands before his creator. So the concept here is that a revelation is something that's between you and God, you and some greater being, and that a miracle is between you and your peers. And I think what, just demonstrating some maturity here and some understanding of the world situation, that A Course in Miracles is implying strongly that what we really need are miracles, not revelations. We need experiences of contact, of connecting to others, and of the healing that is involved in that, rather than to be like worshiping, you know, some great thing that happens. This is a practical learning process. Continuing, you are a perfect creation and should experience awe only in the presence of the creator of perfection. The miracle is therefore a sign of love among equals. Equals should not be in awe of one another because awe implies inequality. It is therefore an inappropriate reaction to me being Jesus. An elder brother is entitled to respect for his greater experience and obedience for his greater wisdom. He's also entitled to love because he's a brother, and devotion if he is devoted. Devotion if he is devoted. It is only my devotion that entitles me to yours, says Jesus. There is nothing about me that you cannot attain. By the way, one of the central messages that actually seems to have made it through into the New Testament. A miracle that. There is nothing about me that you cannot attain. I have nothing that does not come from God. The difference between us now is that I have nothing else. This leaves me in a state which is only potential in you. I'm smiling. That's pretty funny. Let's listen to some music. This is from Vision Quest, somewhere from the Vision Quest library, to be selected during post-production. Here you go. listening to the Miracle Hour, brought to you through Pacific Radio Network, Planet Waves FM, and broadcast on WOOL Black Sheep Radio. That was just music from the Vision Quest project. My name is Eric Francis Compolino, and we are talking about revelation, time, and miracles from the first chapter of the Course in Miracles textbook. So this is considered really preparatory or introductory information that is foundational, that you take this with you through the entire journey. And it's helping kind of elucidate, clarify, illuminate some things that might happen and how they might work, particularly involving the structure of time. So let's continue. We left off a few moments ago with I considered it kind of a witty statement, but then again, I have a demented sense of humor. Jesus, speaking in the first person here, says, "There's nothing about me that you cannot attain. I have nothing that does not come from God. The difference between us now is that I have nothing else. This leaves me in a state which is only potential in you." All right, next paragraph, quote, "No man cometh unto the Father but by me," close quote, quote from the Bible. There's some of this going on in A Course in Miracles, which Jesus elucidates in the text. "No man cometh unto the Father but by me" does not mean that I am in any way separate or different from you, except in time. And time does not really exist. The statement is more meaningful in terms of a vertical rather than a horizontal axis. You stand below me, and I stand below God. In the process of rising up, I am higher because without me, the distance between God and man would be too great for you to encompass. I bridge the distance as an elder brother to you on the one hand, and as a son of God on the other. My devotion to my brothers and sisters has placed me in charge of the sonship. This is, I believe, the first use of the word sonship that I recall, meaning all of us here, which I render complete because I shape it. My devotion to my brothers has placed me in charge of the sonship, which I render complete because I share it. This may appear to contradict the statement, "I and my Father are one," quote, quote, but there are two parts to the statement in recognition that the Father, Creator, God, is greater. Okay, so let's review this a second. And this is introducing the concept of a vertical axis, right? So Yogananda, one of my favorite people, has this talk that he gave once, and he says, "God, Christ, gurus." And he says it again, "God, Christ, gurus." So Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, is saying basically the same thing, that there is God, and then there is the Christ, the kind of unifying, orderly kind of like consciousness. And then there's gurus, who are shedders of light, who in turn make the teachings more accessible. So there's one kind of layer added by Yogananda, which is the level of the light bringer, the storyteller. In this case, that might be me. I'm sitting here telling you a story. Definitely in the words of the Grateful Dead, to shed light and not to master. All right. The statement is more meaningful in terms of a vertical rather than a horizontal axis. You stand below me and I stand below God. In the process of rising up, I am higher because without me, the distance between God and man would be too great for you to encompass. This is really interesting. I, Jesus, bridge the distance as an elder brother to you on the one hand and as a son of God on the other. My devotion to my brothers has placed me in charge of the sonship, which I render complete because I share it. Render complete because I share it, meaning he's saying I'm part of you. I'm part of creation. This may appear to contradict the statement, "I and my Father are one," but there are two parts to the statement in recognition that the Father is greater. So if you don't let these male pronouns get in the way, which is good to avoid, you get used to them after a while. And I'm going to stick in brothers and sisters, maybe sonship and daughtership, but they're trying to have one word to describe the whole bit. And my sense, by the way, is that they are talking to people who have previously been indoctrinated by Christian language and who are already accustomed to it. I had that recognition many times working this materials. All right, new paragraph. Revelations are indirectly inspired by me because I am close to the Holy Spirit and alert to the revelation readiness of my brothers. I can thus bring down to them more than they can draw down to themselves. So let's keep reading. Then I'll tell you what I think. The Holy Spirit mediates higher to lower communication, keeping the direct channel from God to you open for revelation. Revelation is not reciprocal. It proceeds from God to you, but not from you to God. So now they're talking about miracles here, and this is a horizontal, direct from God experience, and what the voice here is saying is that the Holy Spirit exists in your mind as a portal if you choose to direct your consciousness there, and it might not even be necessary, but certainly if you choose to direct your consciousness there, the Holy Spirit is a kind of an opening in your mind that retains its central connection to kind of central God, right? It's the part of your mind that knows that you are not separate from God. Personally, I found this to be really useful. Okay, now here's some info about time. The miracle minimizes the need for time. Pausing. A number of times, the Course in Miracles says that the miracle is a time-saving device. So, the miracle minimizes the need for time. In the longitudinal or horizontal plane, the recognition of the equality of the members of the sonship, daughtership, thus, appears to involve almost endless time. Appears to involve almost endless time. So we're in this illusion of endless time, with the hint that it's almost endless. However, the miracle entails a sudden shift from horizontal to vertical perception. This introduces an interval from which the giver and the receiver both emerge further along in time than they would have otherwise been. So in a sense, the miracle skips ahead. It skips time. It skips to the better part of the movie, basically, and utilizes the illusory property of time, the fact that time is an illusion, to skip on ahead to a better place, in my interpretation of this. The miracle thus has the unique property of abolishing time to the extent that it renders the interval of time it spans unnecessary. Right? Why go through all the trouble of being sued or suing someone when the whole thing can just be resolved and you're done? And you didn't waste all that time and energy, by the way. Of course, Miracles doesn't say that time and money are one illusion, but we know that they're closely related. Okay, so the miracle is thus has the unique property of abolishing time to the extent that it renders the interval of time it spans unnecessary. So it's a span in time. There is no relationship between the time a miracle takes and the time it covers. The miracle substitutes for learning that might have taken thousands of years. It does so by the underlying recognition of the perfect equality of giver and receiver on which the miracle rests. The miracle shortens time by collapsing it, thus eliminating certain intervals within it It does this, however, within the larger temporal sequence. Gee. What I like about this writing, this particular section, is its kind of journalistic quality. It's like, you can imagine a bunch of, space cadets sitting up on the Pleiades, and, you reach the age of, 30 or something, and you're, or two or whatever it might be up there, and you're ready for some teaching, and there's a light being, an incarnation of the Holy Spirit, who says, "Good morning, class. Revelation induces the complete but temporary suspension of doubt and fear." Oh, what's that? That means a moment where you're not afraid. And so this light being continues. Well, here we have the lecture notes. "The miracle reflects the original form of communication between God and his creations." The original form of communication between God and his creations before we had this whole idea that we were completely separated from each other and from God and from everything else, involving the extremely personal sense of creation sometimes sought in physical relationships. So it's saying that what we seek in physical relationships is revelation. Physical closeness cannot achieve it. Miracles, however, are genuinely interpersonal and result in true closeness to others. Revelation unites you directly with God. Miracles unite you directly with your brother. Neither emanates from consciousness, but both are experienced there. Consciousness is the state that induces action, though it does not inspire it. You're free to believe what you choose, and what you do attests to what you believe. That could be a bumper sticker or an internet meme. You are free to believe what you choose, and what you do attests to what you believe. So think of your actions as a testimony to what you believe. That's a helpful little thing all by itself, whether you go for all of this Jesus, Holy Spirit stuff or not. That's pretty amazing. Revelation is intensely personal and cannot be meaningfully translated. That's why any attempt to describe it in words is impossible. Revelation induces only experience. You experience it. You don't do anything about it necessarily. And I would say that in my experience of revelation, there's nothing to do. It was just experiencing something. So, true enough here. Miracles, on the other hand, induce action. They are a form of action. They're more useful now with the world in the problematic state that it's in because of their interpersonal nature, noting how separate people feel from one another. In this phase of learning, working miracles is important because the freedom from fear cannot be thrust upon you. Revelation is literally unspeakable because it is an experience of unspeakable love. And what the concept here, I think, is that you're not going to experience revelation or unspeakable love until you are ready for it. And there's a bit later on called revelation readiness where your mind is open enough to experience something that is not going to blow your mind. I mean, this is important. The idea here is not to have your mind blown like some Bible character, not knowing what that thing coming down out of the sky is, or translating into David Bowie, "There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our mind." Well, what Jesus is saying in this passage is, I'm not going to blow your mind, and you're not going to have freedom from fear thrust upon you. So, bear that in mind. I think one of the reasons why there is fear of approaching spiritual topics directly like this, and I don't mean goody good spiritual topics, I mean the nuts and bolts that we're getting here, is that one might not be ready. So, workbook is intended as preparation for that readiness, and numerous times in Course in Miracles, they talk about the necessity only to bring the small willingness. Another idea from this work that has been very helpful a number of times, that for a miracle to happen, you only need to bring the small willingness, and God or Jesus or the Holy Spirit or whatever it's showing up as that day brings the greater willingness. So that can be a mantra. You do not have to do it all. You only need to do your little part, a little bit. Okay, so that's that. That is that section. Starts to sound more familiar after a few readings, doesn't it? And we'll link to this. How is this? This is a weird website because it's framed. It's but we'll figure out how to link to this. It's we've been reading from a text, chapter 1, section 2, again, Revelation, time, and miracles. Let's break for a little more Vision Quest music, again, to be determined in post-production. But let's hear how this comes through as music. Listening to the Miracle Hour, brought to you through Pacifica Radio Network and Planet Waves FM. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, and today we have been talking about Revelation, time, and miracles. We read that section pretty carefully. I think it's always good to read and reread, and I would say if you are reading on the internet, to print out these things and keep them in a folder. One thing about materials that are printed onto paper as opposed to, like, for example, a Kindle or looking at it on a laptop screen or, as I am, a desktop computer screen, is that you want to make it your own, I think. And the ability to underline and, take margin notes is going to be helpful. I tell this to astrology students, too, that you really need to print these charts out and make them your own by, annotating them and kind of customizing them to your own kind of mental landscape. And it's difficult to do that with a Kindle screen. And I know there's some Kindles that allow you to take notes, but maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but I'm a big fan of pencils. And I would recommend getting yourself a copy of the Course in Miracles edition, if this turns you on. If not, or you know, it's possible to get plenty just by listening to this program, just by reading. But if you decide you want to jump in, it's nice to have the book, and it's all contained in one nifty combined volume. In the time remaining, let's look at another section of A Course in Miracles from, let's see, we're still in chapter one. I've skipped ahead a few, and now we're in text chapter one, section six. I'm going to go back perhaps next week and read some of the material in between, but I thought this was an interesting chapter to, sub-chapter to change to, switch to, change to, basically, yes, the illusion of needs. All right, so we're still early on, and there seems to be some understanding of the experience level of the student here. So, the illusion of needs. You who want peace can find it only by complete forgiveness. No learning is acquired by anyone unless he wants to learn it and believes in some way that he needs it. While lack does not exist in the creation of God, it's very apparent in what you have made. It is, in fact, the essential difference between them. Lack implies that you would be better off in a state somehow different from the one you are in. Until the separation, in quotes, which is the meaning of fall, nothing was lacking. There were no needs at all. Needs arise only when you deprive yourself. You act according to the particular order of needs you establish. This, in turn, depends on your perception of what you are. All right. In the spirit of rereading, let's reread that one. You who want peace can only find it by complete forgiveness. No learning is acquired by anyone unless he wants to learn it and believes in some way that he needs it. While lack does not exist in the creation of God, it is very apparent in what you have made. It is, in fact, the essential difference between them. Lack implies that you would be better off in a state somehow different than the one that you are in. Until the separation, which is the meaning of the fall, nothing was lacking. There were no needs at all. Needs arise only when you deprive yourself. You act according to the particular order of needs that you establish. This, in turn, depends on your perception of what you are. Very interesting idea that you act according to the needs you perceive, and that you establish those needs, and you establish your sense of your needs based on your perception of what you are. There's a good few references in A Course in Miracles to this idea of who and what you think you are. And we're going to get to some of them, because it comes up and it's compelling. Let's keep reading in this subchapter 6. A sense of separation from God is the only lack you really need to correct. The sense of separation would never have arisen if you had not distorted your perception of truth and had thus perceived yourself as lacking. The idea of order of needs arose because, having made this fundamental error, you had already fragmented yourself into levels with different needs. As you integrate, you become one, and your needs become one accordingly. Unified needs lead to unified action because this produces a lack of conflict. Let's read that again. A sense of separation from God is the only lack you really need to correct. Full stop. Okay, that's so far so good. This sense of separation would never have arisen if you had not distorted your perception of the truth and thus perceived yourself as lacking. So it's saying the sense of lack is based on a distortion of the truth, but it's part, maybe partly true in some way, but it's distorted. And in that distortion, we learn to perceive ourselves as lacking, as out of contact with the universe and therefore lacking something. The idea of order of needs arose because, having made this fundamental error, you had already fragmented yourself into levels with different needs. As you integrate, you become one, and your needs become one accordingly. Unified needs lead to unified action because this produces a lack of conflict. Unified needs lead to unified action because this produces a lack of conflict. The idea of orders of need, which follows from the original error that one can be separate from God, requires correction at its own level before the error of perceiving levels at all can be corrected. Saying start with a big mistake and then work on the little ones, but I suspect that they're going to correct themselves. You cannot behave effectively while you function on different levels. While you do, correction must be introduced vertically from the bottom up. Okay, this is because you think you live in space where concepts such as up and down are meaningful. Ultimately, space is as meaningless as time. Both are merely beliefs. The real purpose of this world is to use it to correct your unbelief. You can never control the effects of fear yourself because you made fear and you believe in what you made. In attitude, then, though not in content, you resemble your creator, who has perfect faith in his creations because he created them. Belief produces the acceptance of existence. Belief produces the acceptance of existence. That is why you can believe what no one else thinks is true. It is true for you because it was made by you. This is a theme that comes up a lot of times, I'm now recalling, which is that the, let's say, the faith in what we make is kind of absolute because we made it, and in that respect, we're like God, who believes in what he made, or she made, or it made, because of having made them. But there's the creation process is starting from different premises. The creation process of God would seem to be starting from the premise that everything is complete. The creation process of human consciousness seems to proceed from a sense of lack and loss, or the illusion of need. All aspects of fear are untrue because they do not exist at the creative level, the passage continues, and therefore do not exist at all. To whatever extent you're willing to submit your beliefs to this test, to that extent are your perceptions corrected. In sorting out the false from the true, the miracle proceeds along these lines. Perfect love casts out fear. If fear exists, then there is not perfect love. But only perfect love exists. If there is fear, it produces a state that does not exist. So this is a commentary on existence, and it is an echo of nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists, right from the beginning, right from the introduction, prior to the principles of miracles that we covered in the second program. And let's reread this kind of equation. In sorting out the false from the true, the miracle proceeds along these lines. Perfect love casts out fear. if fear exists, then there's not perfect love. But only perfect love exists, as in actually exists. If there's fear, it produces a state that is not, does not exist. And by the way, think about how scary fear is. And the implication here is that fear is scary because it basically thrusts your mind into a realm of consciousness that does not exist, but you do exist. And so if you're in a realm of consciousness that in itself does not exist, you're going to feel as if you are bereft and cast off and can't make contact with kind of central creation because you're cut off by it, from it. But the implication here is that the whole thing is basically an artifice. It's a trick of the mind used against itself. Believe this and you will be free, says Course in Miracles. Only God can establish this solution, and this faith is his gift. End of section. So let's reread from the top again, and pending any afterthoughts or announcements, let's call it a week. You who want peace can only find it by complete forgiveness. No learning is acquired by anyone unless he wants to learn and believes in some way that he needs it. And this, by the way, can be applied to all learning anywhere, anytime. I mean, the motivation to learn is what gets you to learn. I mean, it's like the difference between being in a class in university where you just don't know why the heck you're taking the class or what you're going to do with the information versus, you know, you really want to be an EMT because you really want to be a volunteer for the rescue squad. And therefore, you eagerly, openly, willingly go through the EMT training program and you study and you remember it and you do all these things because you both want and need to get this information in and put it to use. Okay, while lack does not exist in the creation of God, it's very apparent in what you made. It is in fact the essential difference between them. Lack implies you would be better off in a state somehow different from the one that you are in. Until the, quote, separation, unquote, which is the meaning of the fall, also in quotes, nothing was lacking. So, by the way, this casts some light on the on this highly mysterious metaphorical Bible story of Adam and Eve. Basically, pure allegory, right? It is, and it happens to not be a Bible story I'm especially fond of for a number of different reasons. Story elements don't seem right. For example, why would God invent a dude and not a chick? You would think if God was going to create us all equal, he would create the dude and the chick. And by the way, there is the Lilith version of the creation myth wherein God does create a man and a woman. And in this kind of feminist version, the guy always wants to be on top. He wants to be in charge. And it's often kind of allegorically represented as the guy being on top during sex. Adam, if that's true, didn't know what he was missing. And so Lilith, the original partner, splits the scene, and then there is the kind of second sex created, and so forth and so on. So the part about the Adam and Eve story that this is reflecting is that there was a pre-fall state of some kind. So we're talking allegory here, but there is a state of mind before all of this insanity that we live with on this planet now was introduced into consciousness. And it would seem to me that the idea of A Course in Miracles is to help get us back into that state of consciousness where we recognize our connection to one another, our connection to the greater cosmos, and our connection to Creator. And that's what I have to say for you, to you this week. You may listen to previous episodes, probably among other places, but certainly on the planetwaves.fm website. You'll find lots of awesome astrology materials and podcasts there. I am easily reached at efc@ericfrancis.com or any of the email addresses on the contact pages on planetwaves.net, planetwaves.fm. For Miracle Hour and Pacific Radio Network, this is Eric Francis Coppolino. It's been a pleasure to do this program for you, and I plan to catch you next week. Bye for now. Thank you.